On today's pod, we take a joyride into our past lives when we were watching movies such as Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, and then we're going to talk about Deadpool 3, which also seems to be revisiting part of our past lives, with a lot of X-Men rumors coming. Sean, are you excited about discussing these rumors?
I'm excited about all those segues just now. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's better than Harry Potter knocked up Nancy Drew when that was in, like, those three movies were in theaters and people had fun on the marquees.
And we go.
Hayden. Everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had.
So this movie was garbage. What is this?
You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing, you know what I mean?
How? Yeah, you're lucky to have me back.
You're never gonna get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up!
So chaotic.
Welcome to episode number 152 of the Guy at the Movies podcast, where we are looking at a looming actor strike with picket signs being made already. So this podcast may not be relevant for a little while.
Maybe we'll break in for a bit, but yeah, I've seen some of my, like, you know, I was about to say some of my actor friends, like, I have many, I have like one, and she posted like, you know, pretty much like the sign is ready. We're not announcing yet, but the sign is ready. So holy shit.
It's not looking good. It's not looking good. Anyway, Sean, how are you?
I'm doing great. This is like an elf when he said, you know, when he fell asleep, he's like, I got a full 14 minutes. That feels like me when I say that I've slept until 8, which, if you know me at all, that's tremendous.
That's like, what, 2.5 hours late?
Usually, yes.
Yeah, I did not get a lot of sleep. It was one of those nights where I kept waking up and I was like I felt like I fell asleep and then woke up 10 minutes later. And it was horrible. And then when my alarm went off this morning, I was like, ugh, time to just get up.
So I podcast in my sleep as well. Like, I listen to podcasts in my sleep. And so, like, that's how I sometimes know the mark of being able to know that I was asleep. Because I'm like, hey, I remember a portion of this podcast being played, but I don't remember the rest of it. Sometimes they also play in my dreams where I'm trying to, like, you know, argue with the person, but I can't get a word in. But that's because I'm not talking to them, actually. But I feel like I'm in a podcast and I'm trying to get a word in and I can't. So that'll be this month's therapy.
I want to bite on that, but I'm going to move on.
Go for it.
Let's just move on. We have a lot to talk about today. There's a lot of good news stories that I think will be interesting to get to. And then we have some movies that we want to touch on. We didn't do a pod last week, so we didn't get to Indiana Jones. But we'll discuss this week. I haven't told you my thoughts, full thoughts on Joyride and Past Lives yet, so that will be fun.
You've had one text for each, pretty much. So
yeah, that's true, actually. Now that you say that. But let's get to the trailers, and we have to start with Dune Part 2. I admittedly just watched this 20 minutes ago, and F, that was a trailer. Like, that was a wild trailer. Number one, it's 3 minutes long.
Yep.
But it just, even the tone from the first one seems so elevated, so much more engaging. And that's not a knock on the first one, because it was important to tell the story the way they did. But it just seems like we're hitting the ground running with this. Austin Butler looks incredible. When Christopher Walken comes on, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the Emperor. Like, here we are.
I do like everyone's like heavily made up and different stuff. And Walken, they're just like, no,
you're good.
Just make him Chris Walken. He's already weird enough for this world.
But I was telling you offline here that there's a shot of Zendaya that I thought was really cool. It kind of mirrors a shot of Timothée Chalamet from the first one, and you can tell that she has so much more to work with here, and her, you know, her plot really takes off. But I'm really excited for this. I just tweeted and threaded. 118 days until that comes out.
That's actually not bad. I'll be in the throes of child rearing, so like, we'll see how that goes for me.
I'm still pulling for November 12th birth.
There's a chance. Yeah, my Thursday night movies are in a slight bit of jeopardy. Maybe I can hold on to some of them. I may have to negotiate a little bit more, which I'm okay with. Like, obviously, because I'll have to raise a kid. But you know, that
one of those things.
Yeah, but I'm still extremely excited for this. This, like, movie just seems
the
massive.
Kid or the movie?
Well, both. Probably equally. I don't know. I mean, like, the movie itself is just such a huge swing. You see so many visual, like, aspects of this. I mean, the Austin Butler stuff just seems crazy. It seems like it's either in a different world or a past world or something. It looks so visually stunning. yeah, I can't say enough great stuff about this trailer. I mean, I still love the first one more. I only watched this one like once, so maybe I need to go back to it. But like, I still can't wait.
Yeah, I agree with you. The Austin Butler scenes are interesting because they're filmed in black and white. And they reminded me of Gore the God Butcher from Thor Love and Thunder a little bit.
I'm sure that's what they're going for. It's, was there a scene where it was just a bunch of like the heads and it was like a million heads and they're like just him was looking up or something? Because that's a very classic film scene, but from a very different situation. Because I saw like a bunch of dots and I'm like, well, if they all got those Butler bald heads, then you know maybe that's what it is. But Butler regardless, it was visually striking.
Hashtag Butler bald heads. Starting it here.
I'm in.
Second one is Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese's American Tale, as it's being billed. True American Tale or something like that, with Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, a bunch of people. And this is telling the story of the Osage Nation and the murders that happened there. I'm completely forgetting the name of the individual. Lily Gladstone is getting like the major buzz. Brendan Fraser's in this as well. The trailer was really interesting to me because you get more of the story, of course. But I still worry that a wide audience isn't going to be really loving this because I don't know that they will totally understand the dynamics at play in the actual trailer and the film at large by just seeing the trailer. However, I will say I watched the trailer when it came out when I was down the shore with my parents. And my mom and I watched it, and my mom was like, that looks really good. I was like, what? Okay, cool.
So it's interesting you say this one, may not catch the wide audience, because I feel like this trailer was designed for the wide audience.
Interesting.
Like, because if you think about it, you get, you know, Scorsese movies are beautiful art projects, fantastic kind of stuff. But he also, like, knows how to, like go to the masses. And I think about this with, like, The Departed and The Irishman especially, when there's two separate trailers. One of them is this like artful, beautiful trailer, like we got with Killers of the Flower Moon, the first trailer. It's like a well put together trailer. The second one, the rock music comes in, the titles get splashed across. There's a little bit of a Tarantino style to it. So I saw this one. I'm like, oh yeah, no, they did their Can You Find the Wolves in This Picture for the first one. And now for the second one, they decided to say like, you know, no, man, you're going to see Scorsese. You're going to see The Departed. And who knows? You might not be seeing The Departed. This one looks like it's going to be a little bit more of a, you know, not an entertaining, you know, goofball fest like The Departed is. And this is going to be more of like a really intense look at like how, you know, a portion of America was founded. And I love that he's still like, you know what? Cool. Enjoy like the craziness here. Enjoy the goofball of Scorsese because Scorsese has that badass pocket of an audience. Yes, sure, he does Hugo and Kundun as well, but he has that badass pocket of the audience that'll just hear Scorsese, and they'll be like, well, I identify with Travis Bickle, so I shall see this movie. And so I like that he did it. I kind of love the first trailer way more, obviously, just because like it's just so beautifully done. But, I mean, this did give a little bit more plot. It also gives a showcase more for Lily Gladstone, which makes a lot of sense because I think of the performers, they're going to be pushing for her very hard. And this has the amazing thing that you always see in a trailer where it's, you know, Academy Award winner, Leonardo DiCaprio, Academy Award winner, Robert De Niro, and then Lily Gladstone. That is always done when you have someone big. I think about A Beautiful Minds trailer where it was literally like Academy Award winner, Russell Crowe, Academy Award nominee, Ed Harris, and Jennifer Connelly. And then Jennifer Connelly wins for A Beautiful Mind. Yeah. And so I think there's something there where they like that was very intentional to put that in to be like, hey, give her her flowers.
When you just said, hey, I thought of that like what's his name? Paul Rudd clip where he's like, hey, hey, look at us. Look at us. No, I completely agree with you. That's actually a very different take that kind of makes me look at this trailer a little bit different. I'm excited about it. I can't wait. This is, I think, one of my most anticipated. It's like top five probably in there. I'm looking up the book right now because I do want to read the book before the movie comes out. And I was like, oh, $9.99. And it's the young reader's edition of Killers of the Flower Moon, no, the Osage Murders and the Birth of the FBI.
They have that, first of all?
Yes. Maybe I'll read that one.
Wow. I didn't know they had like young reader editions of things. Like,
Sean, you don't read.
I know that, but I figured that would like, you know, that little piece of information would happen, but you know. Why are you going to read it? They have there's a movie. It's going to be way better. You don't have to do it,
Sean.
Like, come on. Read. Oh, I'm going to read this thing that I'm about to be able to visually see. Get out of here.
You are out of control. Out of control. All right, let's talk about a movie that I'm not very excited about. This is Red, White, and Royal Blue. It's based on a book by, oh my gosh, I'm going to forget the name, Casey McQuiston. I apologize. Casey
McQuiston. You read the book first?
What's that?
You're going to read the book first?
I did. Oh, and I also lost my copy in the move, and I just ordered another one. But anyway, because I'm going to read it again. But anyway, this is I'm actually really excited about this. So this book is one that follows the son of an American president who gets into a feud with a prince in Britain or the prince of Britain. And then they kind of like find love in that. It's a very, very quirky book, but it's also a very explicit book. Like when you're reading it and they get to like some intimate scenes, they're very descriptive and you're like, what am I reading? Oh my God. So Amazon Prime or Amazon Studios is developing this, and the movie comes out on August 11th. Matthew Lopez is the director. The first trailer just dropped this week, and I've been waiting very anxiously for this trailer. And I will tell you, and even talking to other friends of mine that have read this book, there are scenes in this trailer that give me a lot of hope that they actually captured the essence of the book. I think the trailer is incredible, in my opinion. I'm totally biased on this because I'm very excited. But, I mean, how many trailers have come out where you're like, ooh, that's not it? But the way they build up to this really has me excited. I think the two leads look like they have a lot of chemistry. Uma Thurman is playing the president here, which I just fucking love. And another shout out to a character. Her name's Zara in the book. I believe she's chief of staff to the president, or at least like a senior aide. She's played by Sarah Shahi here. And that character is one of the funniest characters in this book. And you get a little bit of it in the trailer. You know who else is in this movie, Sean?
Go.
Clifton Collins Jr.
Oh, fuck yes.
I don't know what he's doing.
I know. I just love seeing that name.
He just always pops up in like the most random shit. I'm very excited about this. So they went full rated R with it, which I also...
That's a great thing.
I love that because it doesn't seem like they're watering it down. The author was involved in the writing of the script. She was there on set. I'm just very, very excited to hopefully see a good adaptation. When this comes out August 11th, I'm going to lose my mind. And I am trying my best to get into the press for this.
Oh, I think if you do enough, you'll get into the press.
I'm working on it.
I mean, I don't share the exact same enthusiasm as you because this trailer does seem a little bit strangely quirky. I wanted something a little bit more like dark edge, more realism from this thing. But when I watched this trailer, I watched this entire trailer and I said, oh, this is going to be the best movie for Sam and I to curl up and watch. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to be like a good, like, medium, like fun romantic comedy that we'll enjoy. And who knows, maybe it could even be better than that. I, you know, the quirkiness is what turned me off, but the fact that the book is like that makes me realize like I could be down for this. I mean, I'm very excited for it in general. It just seems so crazy. Like, I don't know what, like, it just, I mean, obviously the premise is crazy enough already. So I guess, you know what, match a quirky mood for that and go for it.
Yeah.
Quick question. Was the president a female in the book?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
I don't know if that would have mattered.
A female
way.
From Texas.
Uma Thurman's working that accent.
Yeah, she's working that accent. But that's also like an interesting dynamic in the book as well, of being a Democratic president from Texas.
Oh, okay. So she is a Democratic president. So they're not going to go full conflict on this one.
You'll see.
They're going to have to no matter what as a politician. Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like, this trailer, being a rated R movie, it doesn't show everything in the trailer. Mm-hmm. It's not a red band trailer. So there's a lot of stuff that's still to come in this that I think will hopefully fill in that, like, the holes between the quirkiness. I'll tell you, there's so many quotes from this book that I, like, still remember. I'm going to read a few of them because why not? There's one that's like, thinking about history makes me wonder how I'll fit into it one day, I guess. And you too. I kind of wish people still wrote like that. History, huh? Bet we could make some. Like, that's a great line. I'm reading through real quick. Straight people, he thinks, probably don't spend this much time convincing themselves that they're straight. Like, that's a very insightful line. And I think that's the thing that blew me away by this book and why it became like a runaway hit when the book came out was because it was very, yes, it's fun. Yes, it's quirky. Yes, it's an interesting what if story, but it also dives into the feelings of, you know, someone coming to terms with their identity. in a way that just felt very genuine and relatable. And it's, you know, like, here's another line, like, you are, he says, the absolute worst I've ever had, or worst idea I've ever had. And like, just like, it's just so fucking cute.
It's going to be really interesting. All I can think about, unfortunately, is Bros and how that failed at the box office. And did that fail because it was a gay movie, or did that fail because it was a rom-com? In my opinion, rom-com. Like, because those just don't do anything at the box office anymore. And so now this coming, I believe, directly to streaming. I don't think they're even going to try a theatrical release on this.
Agreed.
It's going to be interesting to see how this is received and if it's just going to be more popular and we realize that, hey, rom-coms are just going to have to go the way of streaming, which is an unfortunate situation, but will help the situation of, hey, we can't do these, you know, quote-unquote risky movies anymore, where it's like, no, you can. It's just that people don't really want to go to the theaters anymore at all. Unfortunately, we're, of course, never going to know that because streaming services don't show their downloads or show their streams, so they're not going to actually, like, you know, ever be, they'll say number one movie, a billion downloads, like, yeah, sure, cool,
dude. Yeah, right.
But they're never going to actually be real, and that's part of this writer's strike, as we bring it all back, is like, they're not being upfront about any of this stuff. And actually, I think you have like something in the news about this as well. And so because we're not being upfront about any of the streaming, I like, we won't ever know. I mean, it'll just be like, how much does word of mouth cover this? And you know what? Late August? I might be on the Cape for this one. So
August 11th. So you're a little early.
Mm.
You might be, though, because when do you start school?
So I don't even know when I start school. But I do know, like, we're a little bit later for the August weekend. So maybe it's the Sunday before I leave. But there's always a big Amazon movie. Last year it was the soccer team.
Oh, The Thai soccer
19
team. 13 days.
No, 13 days.
13 lives. No.
13 lives. Yes.
I mentioned the aide and how funny she is. This is a part of the book. The next slide is titled "Exploring Your Sexuality: Healthy, but Does It Have to Be with the Prince of England?" She apologizes for not having time to come up with better titles. Alex actively wishes for the sweet release of death. And then, just real quick, the author at the beginning, she wrote, "To every person in search of somewhere to belong who happened to pick up this book, I hope you found a place in here, even if just for a few pages. You are loved. I wrote this for you. Keep fighting. Keep making history. Keep looking after one another."
It's lovely.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I'm gonna try. I'm going full fucking press with this press. I want you to know.
I think you're getting in there. You almost interviewed Billy Eichner, for God's sake.
Yeah, if I didn't have back surgery and COVID,
that definitely was a little bit. Yeah, that derailed it a bit.
I just remember not being that upset about it when it happened. Like when the test came back and I was there with my walker and like half dead in clothes that didn't really fit me. I was just like, okay,
yeah, sure.
My dad was actually drove me down. Was more upset. Oh, man. But anyway, yeah, so sorry to go nuts on that, but that is my most anticipated, just because that's like, there hasn't been a book to film adaptation that I've been extremely excited about for a while. And I guess I was nervous about it, but the trailer made me excited. So I can't wait. All right, shall we get into what we've been watching?
For the past 2 weeks, let's go.
Yeah, right. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Harrison Ford, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Mads Mikkelsen,
Holbrook.
Boyd Holbrook in a weird role.
Like, well, the villains are underwritten. Like any good Indiana Jones movie, the villains are underwritten, and that's fine.
I'd agree. He felt very disposable.
Yeah.
Which was probably the point.
But, I mean, he was a goon. He was basically a goon and an assistant, so that's why.
The trailers made me think he was going to be have more impact, to be honest. So, I had a fun time with this. I see the flaws, but it's, if you're an Indiana Jones fan, I think this delivers an Indiana Jones movie. My thought process after watching this was, this is not a film series or franchise that is accessible, I think, to the kids of today, to new audiences. Not. It's for old audiences, and they deliver on that nostalgia, the history, the action, the subtle humor, all of that. In my opinion, I think they did that pretty well. And I ended up walking out of this saying, I had a good time. I will tell you, two younger people that were in the theater with me, one of them was on his phone the entire time, left halfway through. So, I was very interested by that. But I had a good time. I gave this a 3 out of 5. 4 out of 5. I gave it 4 out of 5,
yeah. I gave it a C. I didn't love it. I remember my process was for the first half of it, I was like, oh, I'm giving this a B. This is pretty good. I'm like, you know, it's not perfect, but it's pretty good. Then with the second half, I was like, oh, I'm giving this a D. This is pretty rough. I mean, both this and Crystal Skull, you need to, like, when people railed against those crazy endings, you need to understand that Indiana Jones was always crazy, goofy endings. They were always that way. And so I think, like, people forgot about that when Aliens showed up in Crystal Skull, even though that is a tough one. But in this one, it does make a little bit more sense, but it just felt like it sort of went off the rails. Mm-hmm. I almost liked the false flag, like, of where they were going to put Indiana Jones at the end, and then instead they didn't do that. And I almost... It's like both endings would have worked for me. Like, I kind of love that idea. And but in the end, it was just sort of a very average movie. It had that like modern sheen. I think I feel bad because my issue is that I just put this on the Raiders of the Lost Ark pedestal. Mm-hmm. And so like I see this train action sequence, which was very well storyboarded. But I just think about the other ones and I'm like, I can't do that. I can't compare this to Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah. But it's I see that and I just see the, you know, CGI is not the devil. Effects are not the devil. But in this one, they just felt a little bit too much. The de-aging was good. Like, I'll give that to them. But, like, it just felt like a little bit too much of that. I will give them credit. They used Harrison Ford's age well. Like, they didn't have him, like, doing backflips or having his stunt double do backflips or anything. He was, like, old as shit and still doing diving. Well, yeah.
Except for going back to the train scene, there's a zoom-out shot where the train's moving fast and he's running across and he starts off like this and is like very fast. I was like, ooh, CGI got me there. But otherwise,
I just mean like they didn't have him do like crazy. They didn't have the character do crazy.
Robert De Niro actually. In The Irishman.
Yeah, having to step off a curb. That was a tough one for him. Instead it was just, you know, like even the storyboard and stuff made sense for an old dude, which I liked because like, That was something great. I want to give credit also to Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who punched up the script and definitely only punched up her lines.
I thought she was great.
She was really great. They were great. They were great together. I really liked that. All in all, I just think this is a little bit too disappointing for me. It's not as bad as, you know, French audiences are saying. And, you know, I would give this third place. I'm a Raiders, then a last, and then then this probably.
You know, you said you put this on the, did you say Raiders of the Lost Ark
pedestal? Yeah.
I put it on the Crystal Skull. Like, I had zero.
That's a good way to go.
I really, and I don't know that it was intentional. It was just that I think Crystal Skull showed me that I could go either way with the series. And I was like, well, whatever. So the fact that I actually had a good time when I walked out and was like, you know, I actually was giddy during some of it, like hearing the music, seeing some of the hearing some of the lines, like the reference to snakes was really funny for me.
For the eels. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. When the eels were there and he's like, snake, why would you say snakes or something like that? But I thought they did justice to the character. And if this is the send off, which it sounds like it is, I felt like it was a proper send off. And maybe it was just because it beat my expectations a little bit, which were very low, that I had more fun with it than I thought I would.
Well, this is the, like you mentioned, the send-off. This will now definitely be the send-off after the box office performance. There will never be another Indiana Jones movie as long as we live. And it's interesting you said it because I agree. This is not something for young people. And, you know, we make the comparison because it's also Lucasfilm. Draw the comparison to Star Wars. And let's face it, Star Wars kids start watching Star Wars at a very young age. They start watching the 70s films almost at a very young age. Or they watch some of the cartoons at a very young age. They have all of those things. And they, like, almost, like, for lack of a better word, indoctrinate kids into Star Wars fans. Like, kids just grow up loving Star Wars immediately. And maybe that's because of, like, schmucks like me and Matt that are going to show, that have shown and are going to show their kids Star Wars shit, like, you know, at a very young age. But I think that's what it is. Like, kids, like, just, you know, kids, 20-year-olds these days are huge fans of the prequels and think they're good. Now, I'm a little bit hit or miss on them, a little bit hot or cold on them. But it's interesting that because they were almost raised on them, they do love them just as more.
And yeah.
No one was really raised on Indiana Jones. And it's because you can't show a kid Raiders of the Lost Ark. They'll shit their pants. It's a terrifying movie. Like, so that I think that's the problem with this is they just sort of relied on like, oh, the classic Indiana Jones. It's like, well, it's a little bit trickier to get raised on Indiana Jones.
Dad, what's a Nazi?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to have that talk along with a face melting.
I'm surprised this wasn't like a right wing talking point for the past couple of weeks.
I know, exactly. I will say it's a line that was like trotted over very quickly. But when Harrison Ford like meets Mads Mikkelsen again and he says, your face rings a bell. I was like, Jesus Christ, that is a like state of the art Bond thing, because he got hit by a bell at the train. I was like, this is some Bond shit. I like this talk. Yeah. Keep this going, Harrison.
Yeah, I was into it. I had fun with it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Joyride. Joyride brings a really talented cast to the screen, and is really, I think, incredible for the Asian American representation that's in this film. You have Ashley Park, Stephanie Hsu, Sherry Kola, and Sabrina Wu.
Sabrina Wu, yes.
Sabrina Wu. Okay. You and I haven't talked about this fully.
Yeah, so this is interesting. We're going in blind.
I had a lot of fun with this movie. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it all worked. Mm-hmm. I thought there was a lot of conflicting direction in this. The humor was, for me, hit and miss. There were some lines that I was losing my mind about and was like dying. But then there's others where it does seem like it wades into like the shock value and the vulgarness just to do it. Just to push the envelope. But where Joyride really succeeds is in the interaction between these four individuals, especially Ashley Park and Sherry Cola's Audrey and Lolo. I thought they were great. And even the interaction with Kat, Stephanie Hsu. The Sabrina Wu, I struggled with a little bit with Deadeye.
I did too. Yeah. Like, it was a little bit too much. It was meant to be the comic relief character, and she just kind of went a little bit too far.
A little bit too much. Really work. Yeah. It was kind of like the Zach Galifianakis, but I don't know that it worked that much as it did in The Hangover, or maybe it's because we saw The Hangover three times.
And this is also The Hangover.
And this is The Hangover, essentially. But I did think that like there was a lot of good theming in there. You know, there's been a lot of talk online about the. Well, a lot of talk because there's a young critic that came out and like blasted this for being like anti-white and all this stuff. And blah, blah, blah.
It just wasn't, by the way.
It like, wasn't at all.
I was okay with seeing that because I love getting made fun of, and it just was not that anyway.
Oh, and there's nothing they said that was wrong. That's the other piece. But it was even like the interactions like about them talking about like Koreans versus Japanese versus Chinese. Like that was so funny to me because it was also insight into sort of things that we don't talk about on a regular basis, or we don't even know because we're not in those cultures. But hearing the differences and seeing the differences between the cultures, I thought was really cool and really strong. And I thought Ashley Park was my favorite part of this movie. She was a phenomenal lead, in my opinion. So ultimately, I had a really good time with it. I wanted more. I didn't want, like, I'm not against a vulgar movie. When you guys see Bottoms, you'll see exactly why. Like, I'm not against a vulgar movie and, like, off the wall, off the, like, crazy one. I just felt like the balance between the story it was trying to tell and the capsule in which it was trying to deliver that story didn't quite mesh as well as I would hope.
Yeah, we'll talk about vulgar just for the sake of vulgar in my rant. But, boy, oh, boy. I liked this. I liked this as a comedy. I think that it was really paint by numbers. Like, I was just like, okay, here's the first act. Here's the second act. Here's the third act. Oh, here's the conflict that's going to draw them apart. But eventually, like, it was really,
you saw it all coming.
Like, I it was kind of, like, tough to – that was the toughest moves in those out in that, like, really strict outline. But the performances save it here. They are really good. Yeah, Sherry Cola, I've never heard of, is exceptionally funny. Brings like this very different comedic energy of both the lazy and the outlandish. Ashley Park, like, great lead as she discovers that. You're going to say something. Go for it.
Can I throw – I'm sorry. I always cut you off, and I feel bad about that. Can I throw something? Because you always, like, bring out another thought. The Sherry Cola, she is the exception for me when it comes to the vulgarness in this movie. Because I felt like no matter how vulgar her shit got and how much she kind of went all in on what she was joking around about, it was believable to me because I thought she played that character so well.
And also no one was buttoned up. Like, you know, Ashley Park was a wild child. Stephanie Hsu was a wild child, very much so. I love, by the way, like the first two dynamics were great. Then Stephanie Hsu, it's like, where is she going to fit in this? And she fits sort of perfectly in between them, where she is like now this like buttoned up fancy actress, but she also is like someone who is goofy enough to like go along with the rest of the setting. I really loved how all of them were. And I think that you're right. The humor didn't totally work for me as well. I think the problem was, unfortunately, as many comedies go, it was all the stuff was revealed in the trailer. And I hate being the person that like complains about reveals and trailers. I sometimes think it's not that, but this was like, I laughed the hardest at the stuff that I already laughed at in the trailer. And, you know, I laughed again because it was funny stuff, but it's just like, they gave away way too many plot points in the trailer and like just a little bit too much. So that was like my biggest issue there. I'm trying to find I don't want to say his name anyway, but the cameo at the end, awesome, awesome cameo from, I don't want to say it. Well, spoilers. Daniel Day Kim showing up at the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Such a great Kim. Yeah. I squealed. First of all, that dude just like ages like a fine wine.
I was just going to say that.
Asshole. I've aged more than him since Lost. I mean, well, obviously, because I was in high school, but still. Like, that dude just looks great.
Yeah, I agree with that. Sean, we both had the same experience in terms of so we both saw the 6 p.m. like fan screening or whatever on Wednesday.
You had a slightly different experience, by the way, which we'll talk about with the next movie. Like, I don't know how you went from up to down on that one.
Oh, I had a rough day. So I did a doubleheader, and we'll talk about that. But there were only four other people in the theater with me.
It filled up a little bit for me, it wasn't totally full up. So I think we're going to have a rough box office weekend, unfortunately. We're like, you know, Across the Spider-Verse is probably going to win again or something like that. But yeah, it was a little bit tough. I think, you know, just female comedy led, it's going to get tricky. I don't know. Then now we're all just going to say it. It's going to hit big on streaming maybe. And then, you know, that like, screw it, theaters are dead. Like,
yeah. Well, it's interesting because when I tell you they've been pushing this movie in terms of screenings for the past couple of months, there were five options given to us to press to go see it. I missed every one of them for like traveling or other movies that were scheduled against it. And I was like, oh, I'll see it next time. And then something happened there.
Well, there wasn't a screening for Red Door because apparently they didn't have any screenings for that.
There were no screenings for the Insidious or Red Door. None. Our friend Nick from Australia messaged me. He goes, yeah, well, after seeing it, he said it was, well, no, I'm sorry, because I posted the post credit that there is one at the very end. He goes, didn't see that because I ran out of the theater. I said, was it that bad? He was like, it's just very boring.
I'm glad I am not in the Insidious world, so yeah. I just didn't do, I'm just skipping that one now.
But with Joyride, Box Office Report is saying if Joyride goes over as well with audiences as it has with critics, the film may be able to hold up well in the weeks ahead as an alternative choice to this July's larger films. But as for this weekend, Joyride could be headed for a modest debut of $7.8 million, which would place the film in a close race for fifth with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It's not going to do well, unfortunately, because I feel like while these movies are these movies being diverse cast, different exposure, incredible stories that haven't been told before, it for some reason it's not clicking with wide on they're not clicking with wide audiences, and it's a shame.
It's this ultimate paradox where, you know, we look at our other, you know, raunchy comedy with No Hard Feelings that did pretty solid for what it was at the box office. The problem is they had to reportedly pay Jennifer Lawrence about $20 to $25 million. Not confirmed, that is rumor, but you know, they had to pay her that much, and therefore they're not going to make their money back because they need a big star. But you need a big star in order to get butts in the seats for a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that like it's going to be just a snake that eats its tail constantly.
I love Jennifer Lawrence. I just keep thinking back to the Hot Ones. What do you mean? What do you mean? What do you mean? What are you saying? What do you mean?
She, by the way, like just props to her for press on that one. She just ran the, like, you know, not a rewards campaign or anything, but like a great campaign for this movie. She went everywhere and covered every single, like internationally and everything. She like went hard for that movie.
Did you see that she said after Hot Ones, she threw up violently and passionately?
Such a weird girl. I love her. She's great.
Let's talk about Past Lives. This was number one in my back-to-back movie doubleheader on Wednesday.
I still can't believe you did both in the same day.
Because you have told me a million times I need to see it. Well, first of all, you were very pumped for this movie.
Well, I was getting pissed off because AMC was not showing times for this at all. And I'm like, is this going to be like Blackberry, where it just comes and goes without going into AMC theaters?
Did you see Blackberry?
No, because they didn't go into AMC theaters. I just have not seen that. Everyone talks about like that being in the top 10 and everything. And I'm like, well, fuck all, because I'm not going to see it. So eventually it'll be on some sort of streaming service. I'm not going to fucking pay because I have 800 streaming services. I'm not going to deal with that. Regardless. Yes, finally, like they just like all of a sudden showed like, you know, because I tweeted them. I'm sure it was me. A million showings for Past Lives on Friday. So I got right in there.
So Past Lives stars Greta Lee and T.O.U. as well as John Magaro. I have to be completely honest with you here. I'm still processing this movie.
It's a tough one, dude. I'll say it's very, very simple, obviously, with what the plot is. But it's also complex in the emotions. And I still don't feel, not since like Gone Girl have I felt so like torn by a movie where I'm just like, what is the right decision? What was the right call? And, you know, in the end, I think she does make the right call, like, because it's the very matter of fact one. And, you know, but it just it doesn't stop from hurting. And this is like sort of a not even like a one that got away type of movie or a lost love movie. It's a very unrequited. It's, you know, the one pair never really truly fell in love, but they came close. And so they have that connection and she has that connection with that culture as someone who immigrated. And there's those issues as well. I like that's where I like understand why you're still processing this one, because it is a really, really fascinating movie and one that just has so many different layers that like people could get upset about, people could understand. It's crazy.
That cultural layer, I think, is where I'm stuck right now and wrestling with, because I can't identify with that as much, of course, but I'm sympathetic to it. I mean, I feel it. It was. Now that you just said that, I started thinking about it more. The performances are phenomenal in this. Mm-hmm. Very grounded, very real, very authentic. And I said to you afterwards, I think what I appreciated by this or about this, and this was directed by Celine Strong, is that it's very mature. Yeah. And the discussions, the feelings, you know, Arthur and how he's feeling. With Nora and Hay coming back together and having that week where they're just, you know, revisiting an old relationship, how would you feel? And there's a lot of shots that just hang on Arthur's face that are very impactful and really kind of bring you into the character without him having to say anything, the character's head, I should say. It was an acting powerhouse, and it was a directing powerhouse as well.
It is nuts that Celine Song is like a debut director here. Yeah. That is just absolutely bonkers, because she's been a very famous playwright, very successful playwright. That makes sense with this script. The script is spectacular, like in its silences, in its writing. Every little aspect of it is great. But the fact that you are so artful with this movie, like, I mean, this is someone who's been filmmaking for like 20 years that's making a movie like this. It is like pitch perfect on the directing scale. I was blown away at the imagery, the shots, and I gave a paragraph to this. The silences are so amazing, weighted, and like all of them. And you look in the backgrounds, and it's all couples in the backgrounds, which I like noticed in one scene, and then like just started to notice everywhere. It's all different couples in the backgrounds, and oh god, and Greta Lee, like it's gonna be tough. Like everyone's talking Oscar with this one, it's gonna be so tough for her to get in there because it's such a quiet performance. But it's so good. It's so weighted. And, you know, that last moment just absolutely guts you.
Yeah, so the last moment hit me. For anyone that hasn't seen this, the very last scene brings out whatever emotions you may not have even realized you were wrestling with. I started bawling my eyes out. It was really a weird experience.
Well, and it's such a strange thing because like, oh wait, like, you know, just 12 years ago they had a bunch of Zoom dates and that's really all this is, but there's something more to it. And it's when they see each other that they realize that. And it's just and it's because they believe in all these destinies and all these fates. And I want to give a shout out to John Magaro too, because he really lays it on the table. He's always been like a best friend role. And he's always kind of had roles like this, where he's the evil American, as he said, the evil American that's splitting them up. But like, if I was in that position, if I was in his position, I'd be way more friendly to Tion. I'd be like overcompensating because I'd be so insecure. But like the way he sort of like stands back and stand off and is very uncomfortable the entire time really makes the atmosphere better. Oh my god.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's So between Hay and Nora, there's a lot of intimacy in a way that you don't typically get on screen. Like, there's literally the silence, but then looking at one another, mm-hmm. and you feel it. And there's also, you just mentioned Zoom and stuff. There's another dynamic there where, like, I can see people identifying with that aspect after having gone through COVID and all that. Yeah. Like, you know, what happens when you're actually in the physical presence of someone. I haven't written the review yet because I'm still struggling.
This was my hardest review of the year. Of course, shallow year, and who knows what'll change, but this is my best film of the year. Like, it's just so damn good. I just think that everything is humming perfectly. And I wanted to say way more, and I can't even remember what to say. But, just everyone see this movie. Like, you will love it. And I think there's, like great edits in there. Like, that last scene where they edit back to them being kids, which was not a shot in the beginning of the film. It's just them in that same setting, but dark. And it's just, like, kind of like a transference of that,
and it's very quick.
It's very quick, and it's just like, because that's what the feeling would be like. And whew, I'm getting chills right now. This movie's dope. Definitely check it out. If someone's gonna like rail against it, it's the nothing of consequence happens. But with 100 minutes, it flew like kind of very upsettingly fast, actually. Like, which I couldn't believe. I mean, 100 minutes isn't that long, but still, I was like, for a movie where pretty close to nothing happens, it really trucked.
A24 doesn't miss with me. I say this to the rep that I work with, who manages A24, has become a friend of mine, and I'm always like, all right, what do you got for me now? Like, talk to me. I'm going to see Talk to Me next week. I'm so fucking excited for this movie. Because it's, number one, it's horror. Number two, it's A24 horror.
Wait, Talk to Me is doing screenings next week?
Talk to Me is, no, the following week.
Oh, okay. Whew, I was going to say, that means they really have a hit on their hands.
Yeah.
If they're doing them like practically a month beforehand.
Yeah. All right, shall we dive into the news?
Let's do it.
You're not going to love this.
Okay.
We're going to talk about Deadpool 3. Deadpool 3 is getting a lot of leaks. Of course, we know that... we have Hugh Jackman's Wolverine returning, and the most recent rumor with that is that he will be donning the yellow suit, which is like the major suit from the comics. But there's a lot of leaks about who else is going to be in this movie, which is leading people to think about what the plot actually may be. And I'm just checking because it looks like Deadline has some breaking news here. They do not. I lied. all right, so what we learned most recently is that Elektra is going to be in it, Jennifer Garner's Elektra. And then we also are getting rumors that Ben Affleck's Daredevil is going to return in the movie as well. We know that some of the Colossus and the other characters that we've seen in the previous ones are going to be in this. The other rumors, that the heavy rumors, have been about Magneto coming back, as well as I would say Patrick Wilson. Charles Xavier,
the Ocean Master.
The Ocean Master.
they're gonna cross comic books. Yeah.
But then some of the other crazy freaking rumors here are that we're gonna get we'll get Cyclops, we'll get Storm, we'll get Jean Grey from the Fox X-Men movies, and then we'll also get an appearance by the original Fantastic Four. The original being the Fox movies of Fantastic Four. So what that has led people to believe is that what Deadpool 3 is setting up, or what they're setting up for Deadpool 3, is an adaptation of a comic series, which was called Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. But instead of the Marvel Universe, it's the Fox Marvel Universe. And
makes sense.
And that, so people are kind of losing their minds. It's funny because there's a lot of debate, shocker, on Twitter and Threads. I think this is a brilliant way to tongue-in-cheek get rid of what's come before, X-nay that right away, like no, they're not returning after this, and then move on to whatever the future of the mutants and everything's going to look like. I just think it's pretty genius.
I think it is. I just hate that, like, it's been figured out, because it sounds like something that would be done, and something that would be better kept under wraps. And I think that, you know, there's been this problem with leaks now with this, which the other Deadpool movies have never had. And granted, that was always when, like, you know, like in Deadpool 2, when the entire cast of Dark Phoenix was in the background and everything. And that's because there's like tiny little things where they were on set that moment, so they were able to pull that off. It feels weird that I know this much about it, that we know this much about it.
I'm impressed that you know this much about it.
No. I mean, like, I know it because of you. So that's why I immediately switched to we. It feels weird that we know this much about it. Like, yeah, I saw a few of the leaks. I heard the Elektra thing. But then it's weird because I hear one article says, like, she's rumored. Then, like, all of a sudden there's a Deadline article that said she's definitely in. Yeah. And I'm like, well, if I click on that article, is it just going to say rumored? Probably. And so I don't know what's real.
The Hollywood Reporter has it confirmed.
Yeah, that's okay. That's interesting. So, I mean, also, I just, like, God help us. I can't imagine Ben Affleck going back to another fucking comic book movie. This guy has been desperate to get away from this stuff for so long, and he comes back as Daredevil, which, you know, if they, and the caveat is like, oh, you get to be killed as Daredevil. He's like, cool.
I think he, just given his life, like, you know, the challenges he's had and everything, I think he's enjoying these moments of being able to, like, close that chapter.
Yeah, because I guess, like, technically in The Flash, he's gone. He wasn't killed, but he's, like, in a different... he's George Clooney now. If that's a spoiler for The Flash, fuck off if you're mad about that.
Well, nobody saw it, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, should be interesting. Deadpool 3 is... So there were reports that said it was done production, but then, like, now there's leaks coming out of photos and stuff. I think it's still in production, unless they filmed it within 3 days.
This is galaxy brain tinfoil hat thinking. Is Ryan Reynolds just fucking with us with these leaks?
Probably.
Could that be it? Could he be like, or this is like some Andy Kaufman level shit that I'm thinking about. Like, is he orchestrating behind the set photos? Is he like having Ben Affleck go shopping nearby the filming?
Yeah.
All of this sounds fascinating to me.
Yeah. If they go this route, I think it's a really cool way to go with Deadpool 3 that makes sense for him coming into the MCU.
Yeah.
I wonder how they're going to set it up, though, like what leads to Deadpool and Wolverine teaming up, if they team up. Or is, like, Wolverine the one that's, like, trying to stop him from going out? That's actually probably what it is. Wolverine's probably trying to stop him from going out.
Trying to stop him killing all his friends.
Oh, we got a snort!
I did a snort. Such a goofy thing.
Yeah, I know. Well, speaking of goofy, The Purge 6 is apparently supposed to happen, and Frank Grillo is supposed to return, and the original director, I believe, James DeMonaco, is coming in as well. The latest with this is that he wrote a story that has pretty much taken America in very different directions, where I believe each state... Yeah, so quote, it's about the remapping of America based on ideology, sexuality, and religion, so that the states are broken down. I kind of love that idea.
So, like, America now.
America. you have your black state, you have your gay state, you have your white evangelical state, and it's really a broken country. That's bold as shit. But where it's at right now is that, of course, we have the writer's strike, so production is kind of halted on a lot of that. But the other issue is that there's another quote here I have to read. But the other issue apparently is that the studio is nervous about the budget that this would command. Whereas bringing back Frank Grillo and bringing back this director, they were like, we're going to go big. If this is going to be our last one, we want to go big with it. And I think that the Purge series has been popular enough that they should invest in a good.
It's horror, man. You can put a budget together and you're going to surpass it. Horror is the only thing that will be in theater. It's going to be horror and comic book movies. Those are the things that make money. Comic book movies are having trouble. So literally, I think it's just horror, like, is what makes money now.
The through line of cinema.
That's it. Just put those horror movies in there, man.
This is from comingsoon.net, quoting a Collider article. He elaborated on the real-world parallels of this concept. Quote, what's so strange is that Marjorie Taylor Greene, I'm not going to say more than her name there, recently wished for an America like that, which to me would be the most nightmarish version. It goes against everything that America stands for. Mm-hmm. That's what Purge 6 is. It's kind of a broken America down in this remapping. And then they picked one state that purges still, so that's where it takes place.
And so, correct me if I'm wrong, was the last one the one where they kind of brought in a Trump-like character? I haven't seen any of these, by the way.
I believe so.
Yeah, because I remember they had the red hat in that one where they said, like, make the Purge great again or something like that. So
the Forever Purge. The Forever Purge was the one that had like a Western. The Purge election year was the one that you're thinking of. 2016.
That was like, I remember seeing that. I was like, oh, we're already in that. We're good. I mean, that
Tanakh Huerto was in the Forever Purge.
Ooh.
Interesting. I haven't seen that one either. Yeah, so I mean, I think you're right. Investing in horror like that is probably the best way for studios to go right now. And when you have a series that's this far along, just fucking do it. They will.
And what studio is it? Do we know that?
Universal, isn't it?
Because I was going to say, if it's Blumhouse, because I know that, like, I bet they haven't had the same studio throughout these whole six purges.
Blumhouse.
Like, something tells me this the first one was Blumhouse, just off the top of my head.
It's Blumhouse.
But, yeah.
Blumhouse, yeah. Well, distributed by Universal, but it's Blumhouse.
Oh, okay. Those fun things.
Here we go.
Coming soon to Peacock.
Yeah, coming soon to Peacock. Let's go back to A24 here. I don't know what to make of this story.
Yeah, I can't figure this one out either. Like,
so, Mattel Films is... you know, going all in with their toy lines, which good for them. Use your IP. That's why Bob Iger is so good at what he does when it comes to Disney. But we know that Daniel Kaluuya is going to be starring in and producing a Barney film for Mattel Films. Barney, I love you.
No, we know who he is.
We're a happy family with a great
baby. Oh, you're going for it.
No, I don't remember the rest.
Oh, there you go.
Apparently, executive Kevin McKeon from Mattel has said that this is going to be an adult-oriented, quote, A24-type project. We're leaning into the millennial angst of the property rather than fine-tuning this for kids. It's really a play for adults. Not that it's rated R, but it'll focus on some of the trials and tribulations of being 30-something, growing up with Barney, just a level of disenchantment with the generation.
Okay. I mean, I like, you know, it's interesting because you have things like called the Barney movie or, you know, like what Barbie is doing right now, where it's like, oh, is Barbie just taking place in a dreamland the whole time? No, they're bringing her to the real world. And that's going to be where the main conflict lies. So is this going to be like a Barney movie where like it's just an obsessed fan of Barney and then people like are just labeling it the Barney movie when it's actually like that's not the central character or everything? So I don't exactly know until I see a plot, I can't pass judgment on this.
Plot.
I mean, like some sort of premise here. Cause right now it doesn't seem like they're just like firing off moods and it's like, cool. But you know, you got to give me like whatever this is going to be about. Like we found out Barbie was going to go to the real world, like at the very beginning of like the stages of development with that. And so we were excited. We're like, oh, that's going to be an interesting like take on that stuff before like, you know, before it went fucking crazy. But I don't know what any of this would be. I mean, you know, I'll watch Daniel Kaluuya do anything. So cool.
Yeah. Daniel Kaluuya, his involvement has always interested me, which kind of, I mean, it kind of told me that there was something more to this story. But yeah, like you're saying, I kind of want to understand a little bit more of the direction of the actual plot before I judge it. A24 style, you got me. I'm hooked.
I mean, wait, let's be careful though. A24 style, is it being done by A24?
No.
That's scary. See, that's a scary thing because like, that means they just want to be cool and hip. And so they say A24 style, they're just dropping that. So that like if A24 was doing it, I'd be a little bit more interested. But this is getting a little bit worrisome.
Yeah. Our last story is kind of about the state of streaming and some stuff that's been happening. This one really sucks. So you may not have heard of this movie because they didn't do a great job of advertising it. But this was a film by Kyle Patrick Alvarez from 13 Reasons Why. And the screenplay was from the From creator, that show that everyone's losing their mind. Are you watching From? From?
From.
From. It's the MGM Plus show or whatever from The Lost.
I watched the first season.
People are obsessed
with it. It was on Amazon Prime, and I thought it was very bad.
Really?
I think when you're doing a horror movie that wants to be just like Get Out and including that much black suffering, it's more torture porn.
Interesting.
If it's the same thing, because I thought that was just a limited series, but apparently...
No, it's still going.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a limited series anymore.
Oh, God, no.
Anyway, Crater is the film we're talking about. It's set in 2257 and follows a group of kids living on a lunar colony who have grown up with a moon as their home and the earth as a feature of their night sky. One day they steal a rover and set out from the safe confines of the colony to investigate a mysterious legendary crater. It looks pretty cool. Oh wait, that's them the
the article
that's Slash Film saying it looks pretty cool. Long story short, who starred in this? It was actually a good cast, I thought. I don't have it right in front of me. Crater movie. This was McKenna Grace.
Oh.
Kid Cudi. Cutie.
Oh. Oh, Kid Cudi's good. I thought it was Machine Gun Kelly.
He's okay. anyway, but the movie was released from Disney Plus 48 days after it was released on Disney Plus. And the article I'm reading is citing how a lot of people had it like in their watch list and stuff and didn't know that there was a deadline to watch it. But this is a part of the larger cost cutting. And, you know, trying to, I guess they don't have to pay royalties after that and stuff. Like there's certain aspects of it that I don't totally understand.
Tax cut stuff and everything. There's a lot of business to it. Yeah.
But man, like that, this kind of makes me, it makes me think back to Batgirl, which isn't as bad as obviously not even releasing the movie at all or not finishing it, but the relationships with those filmmakers, with the actors and the, I don't know. I don't like this. It's almost like in a way to put my right wing tinfoil hat on, it's almost like censorship in a way. Like you're making these creative decisions of cutting things that people can no longer watch. And I don't like that.
Yeah, I'll even go harder than you. I think it's unconscionable. I think if like a certain streaming service is creating a movie and then they decide to pull that movie, I think, and there's nowhere else to access that movie then, I think that's upsetting. Mm-hmm. I really do. I understand all the businesses behind it. I understand the cost of fortune to keep something on streaming, and especially when it's not streaming. I get that. But I just think morally it's unconscionable. I mean, this movie is now lost. Now, is it a movie that like is good or anything? I heard it was not great. And so whatever, like I heard, like, I think about this with American Pickle when it was dropped by Max. And I think about that and I'm like, yeah, American Pickle was kind of funny. It wasn't that great. It wasn't really that memorable. I probably would have never watched it again. But I think that now that movie is just completely like disappeared into the ether is, I think that's really upsetting. I just, that's art that is just gone forever. Yeah. And I get it. Like, you know, hey, Netflix picks up like an old movie and then gets rid of that old movie. That's not Netflix's movie.
That's different.
That's not Netflix's movie. But in this, you created this movie. You were responsible for making it. I think that means you owe it to, I mean, I'll say literally everyone. Once again, I don't think Crater was a huge, like, huge hit. But if it, like, you have the data of if it's on watch lists. And I don't know, man. I just think with something like that, especially Disney Plus, where, let's face it, like, parents are just, like, hitting play on everything on that damn thing. And, like, just hoping that, like, something comes through because they're just dying there. I just think it's unconscionable. You just like literally like vaporize a creation. It's always had a real, and it's happening everywhere with a lot of streaming
HBO services. Max was the first notable one to really go through.
They did it with like Minx, and I was like, Minx was like a pretty solid hit show, and thankfully Stars picked it up, but now I'm not gonna get Stars. I think one of the worst ones also, or I can't imagine. Thankfully, Insecure is going to go to Netflix. Imagine if they just got rid of Insecure.
That's
an Emmy-winning comedy. I don't understand what's going on here with that. I guess business is business, but I don't know, man. When your business is art, you got to have a little bit more of a soul, and it does not seem like they're having a soul here.
It makes me wonder if a lot of these business decisions that are being made around, you know, not releasing a film or taking the film away and, you know, not having to pay XYZ, if that also is factoring into, number one, the changing state of streaming, which we talked about weeks ago, that, like, you know, streaming is very different today in, you know, what, in July of 2023 versus March of 2020, and even a couple months after that when the pandemic was really swinging. But then also these strikes that are happening, the writer strike and the impending potential actor strike.
I think, unfortunately, it's like that should be part of like whatever negotiations. I don't know if they'll be able to have the like strength to have those negotiations with all the other shit.
Steve Jobs, one more thing.
Yeah. It's like, but man, I just get so upset about this. And, you know, I get that, like, that is what business is, but it's upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. All right. Well, that was the news. And ending on that note.
Conclusionary news right there. We're doing good.
Rants and raves. I'm going to start ranting here about one thing that really fucking sucks. It's called getting old. I am 36 years old. At 35, my back decided to say, we're done.
See you next year, buddy.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I've ever shared specifically what happened, but I was lifting something with my brother, very light piece of furniture, felt a pain, thought I pulled something, ended up that I had a herniated disc and part of it broke off and it traveled over and lodged in a nerve. So that was the most painful couple of days of my life, or they were, I should say. And then more recently, I have something called tinea versicolor, which is, yeah, I don't know if you've ever heard of this. So it's a discoloration of the skin based on like a layer of the inherent fungus that we all have on our skin. I don't have that, or I have a thin one. So like I have very different coloration. Do you see the two different colors here?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, so I have it in random spots. I've addressed it before, and like it's not uncommon. But like they used to give you one pill that, or two pills, take one 2 weeks in a row on a Friday, and it would knock it out for like a year. And then the FDA said that it wasn't approved anymore. Jesus. And I was like, oh, I'll still take it. No, kidding. But apparently it wasn't good for your liver. Long story short, I recently broke out in what I believe is eczema for the first time in my life at 36. So that's been happening. And then I have a honker of a zit or ingrown something here. Which
that's a beaut. I get those all the time, yeah.
It hurts. It's like, it's big underneath. You know what I mean? Like it, and I'm like, so of course I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying. And that it just popped up like 2 days ago. So things are really not going great over here for Joe Pelzer. I also have a zit right here, which popped up. So things are really wonderful and getting old sucks, but 35 was the age where my body said, we're going to make a U-turn here and start teaching you some lessons.
When you had getting old on the outline, I assumed it was just like, you know, we don't know who TikTok stars are now or anything like that. But, you know, like we're just like TikTok stars. Splibbity Gee has been rushed to the hospital. I'm like, we didn't even get a chance to see your work. But it's your body is crumbling.
It's literally my body is crumbling. and I don't get it. But
oh, boy. Well, speaking of disasters, The Idol concluded its first and what seems to be most likely its only season. There's rumors of it, like, you know, it was going to last two seasons or something, but there's just no way this can go any further. I will say this is a show on HBO. It is it's a horrific show. It's genuinely bad. And I'm almost ranting about it because, yeah, there's other shows out there that are bad and everything. But I'm ranting about this one because this had the potential to be great. In the first episode, there's this whole subplot with Dan Levy and Hank Azaria and Divine Joy Randolph. And they're all like, you know, part of this musician's team. And they're all trying to like figure out how to put out fires and everything. And I'm like, this is actually fun to watch. But no, instead it's about Lily Rose Depp, the pop star, and the romance slash cult started with Abel Ferreira, also known as The Weeknd. This show hinges on The Weeknd having an amazing performance. Like, you have to have this complex performance that's also charming and everything, and it is the exact opposite.
I heard it was creepy.
I would have liked that, but it wasn't even that. It was just everything was flat. It was dry pasta the entire time. I couldn't believe it. Like, no, I wanted like creepy. I wanted like unstable. I wanted freaky. I wanted something. But you couldn't get anything out of him. And I'm like, well, this whole thing is about him being like a cult leader kind of situation. And then his downfall slightly. And then, you know, the entire thing just gets washed away when she chooses him at the end as like a romantic gesture, which is like, there's like fucked up beyond fucked up beyond fucked up. And that is it. Like this movie, like in the first episode, which I thought was the only one that had like a light glimmering light to it, or glimmering hope to it. They lock the intimacy coordinator in the bathroom. In the show, like to just as a comedic note, like so that she could pose nude. And I'm like, all right, so that's the priorities this show has. So we know that they probably didn't respect anything that, like, you know, actually could be, properly, properly monitored, because there were a lot of behind the scenes controversies as well. I know this was a different show before The Weeknd showed up, and then The Weeknd showed up and it's like, hey, we'll film the whole thing at my house and like, let's change the entire story to be about me instead. And it's like, no, dude, we don't want to see that. It was just so bad, and it's just so unfortunate that, like, Sam Levinson is a director that is a Nepo baby, and that's fine if you got the talent. And Sam Levinson has the talent, but he just always squanders it, and he always makes such pretentious bullshit. Euphoria is great, and then, like, it kind of drops off from there. And, you know, because, I mean, like, Malcolm and Marie was just this, like, weird-ass, like, just self-indulgent piece of crap. And then this is just an absolute mess. And it's a shame that, like, you know, we find out about stuff getting, like, deleted from the streaming service. And this will be on there the whole time because, you know, Sam Levinson has the cash cow of Euphoria. That's business, I guess. But, like, we'll always see this. But, you know, thankfully, I think they canceled it after one season.
He also wrote Deepwater.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. And yeah, so I just say, you know, The Weeknd, you're a fantastic musical artist. Stay there, buddy. Stay there. Do not act again. The only time before this you acted was Uncut Gems, where you played The Weeknd. So maybe stick to that as well. Where
nailed that.
Yeah, he did great. Like, performing at a club, he nailed that. So we're good.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
It was a rough one.
All right, let's get the raves. I came out at 22. But today I'm coming out at 36 with a very different story.
Okay.
Britney Spears will always be my number one. But I think I'm a Swiftie.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. Because mm-hmm. I love Taylor Swift's music. And I listen to her entire discography more than I realized. And now with her most recent release of Speak Now Taylor's Version, I'm revisiting songs that I haven't really like focused on in years and fucking jamming in the car. And it's taking up time from my podcasts. I think I'm a Swiftie, dude.
So you've hit that corner of TikTok. I hit it about a month ago where it was just like footage from her concerts.
Well, I've watched her entire concert on TikTok. Yeah.
It's like, it's unbelievable. I haven't seen a musical artist have this sort of sway before where there is huge groups of people outside, outside of it. And like, they have their own concert. They have their own party. And I think that's a next level amazing that you can't even touch at this point where it's just iconic. And
she's making millions every night of her show. I think it just crossed a billion. The
I think she was on the verge of crossing a billion. She'll be the first performer to do it. So,
she just seems like her documentary. Did you ever watch the documentary?
That was I missed that. That was the Miss Americana, right?
I believe it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very interesting because that was also during like when there was a really anti-LGBT and really nasty person mm-hmm. running for state representative or state senate, or maybe it was senate in general. And she wanted to speak out, and she had been quiet.
She was very politically quiet for a while.
Yeah. Yep. And then there's an interesting scene where she's like arguing with her parents about it. And her manager's there and stuff. And she finally is like, I need to speak out. Like, and she's essentially saying like, these are my fans. Like, why am I not, you know? But it's, she just seems like, number one, she's a brilliant, brilliant artist. Mm-hmm. Number two, her marketing is genius. Absolutely genius. I mean, the music video that dropped at midnight last night or whenever it dropped, apparently also references, like there's a scene in there. There's always something more in her videos.
Oh, yeah.
And in this one, she's driving and there's a sign over top that says 1-9 and then under it, 8-9 TV, which is 1989 Taylor's Version. So that's indicating that's the next one. But like, that's just cool stuff. And if you ever get to that side of TikTok that dives into like, what is she trying to tell us? She's wearing this or she made this arm movement. Number one, get a fucking life. But number two, like, that's cool. Like, she's done a great job of just marketing herself. No, knock on wood, you don't hear anything bad about her. Like, she hasn't had a phase that has been completely negative. Granted, she dumps boyfriends like crazy.
Yeah. Well, there's always the only thing I have negative against her is that she's too positive, where I'm like, what's she up to?
Yeah,
what's going on? She hosted a slumber party with a bunch of fans. What's going on there? What's happening there? Like, there's the cynical side of me.
Yeah,
I
completely agree with you. I don't know. There's something about her I just really enjoy. There's even her saddest songs are like jams. Like All Too Well, the 10-minute Taylor's Version, get me. Like it hits me every time, and I'm like screaming in my car. And even when I see they're sharing the bridge, I think it's Cruel Summer.
I don't know the actual song, but
do you know what I'm talking about?
I know the bridge to Cruel Summer. I don't know the song, but I know the bridge to Cruel Summer.
And like the fans are screaming, they're
insane.
It's cool. Like, that's What a cool thing. Like, and good for her for knowing what fans want and being able to deliver on that. She has surprises every night. She brought out Taylor Lautner from Twilight last night, who used to date, and there's a song about him. But like, they've made amends, and I don't know. There's something about her I just think is really, really cool. But she also reminds me of Adele. Remember when like Adele had like
would break up and we'd be like, oh, we're getting some songs out.
Yeah, but then apparently like she was happy. She was married and everything, and she wasn't making music. And they were like, oh, their student, her label's like, don't be happy.
Yeah, I it's so funny. Sam like has like, for our entire time dating, was just like, oh god, I hate Taylor Swift. She listens to all of the music. It's in every single Instagram montage of the year and everything. Like, she loves Taylor Swift. It's like we both blast Cruel Summer when we're like getting ice cream and stuff, because that's what my life is. Pulse Quickener.
All right, you're up.
Oh, so I got to talk about these two really great LGBT documentaries that I saw. The first one is on Max, and it's called Rock Hudson, All That Heaven Allowed. Rock Hudson was like a hugely famous old Hollywood movie star and essentially the first celebrity to die of AIDS. And so he brought it like to a whole new level, like gave it a lot more attention, which is unfortunate that that's what took it to get attention, but that was the case. It's an exceptional documentary. It's a very straight down the line one, but it's like his entire life, his growing up, the secret side of his gay lifestyle, his basically, you know, quote unquote arranged marriage that was like done for business purposes. It's an exceptional documentary. It really like breathes into like new life into him. And I'm not someone who's like seen a lot of Rock Hudson movies, even though I'm obsessed with old Hollywood. But I haven't seen many of them. So like studying that celebrity, and also it was a great study of celebrity. And you see that his movie choices, like not overtly at all, obviously, but were very much about the closeted lifestyle. I mean, the guy's name was Roy Fitzgerald. He had a movie star name, but he had to mask himself a little bit to be Rock Hudson. there's a lot just there. Yeah. And I think that like examining that celebrity was really great. And I thought, I was like, wow, this is a great piece of LGBT documentary. I'm really glad this is here. And then I saw just last night on Netflix, it's not getting done as well, but oh my God, El Dorado, Everything the Nazis Hate.
Oh, I saw you post about that.
Holy shit, was this an amazing documentary. I'll first say, and this is not the most important thing about it, but you know how documentaries have those like shitty reenactments all the time that are always like poorly produced, and you know they're always meant to be sort of shady. The reenactments on here are movie level quality, like, oh, wow. Really good. And they still don't really give them lines or anything, but like just like great actors involved. This is about the gay and trans clubs in the 30s in Berlin, which unfortunately goes the way you think it does. But it gets into the history of the like rise of Hitler, which, you know, I'm not much of a history buff, so I didn't know. I knew like, you know, that occurred, but I didn't know much about it. Also, his associate, one of his right hand men, were gay and would frequent these clubs, and how that unfolded. What this does is gets into three different relationships that are, you know, gay and trans relationships, and just chronicles them from the 30s and some of them all the way up until now. And they are just some of the most beautiful things. I there's some moments at the end that were so goddamn beautiful. I couldn't believe it. Like I was very, very emotional, because there's one guy that like, you know, is still alive today. And like, it was funny because like the Rock Hudson one I thought was amazing, and it is really good. But then this one showed up and I was like, oh my God, this is an amazing documentary. Like, it's really good. It's really inventive. And you know, obviously it's extremely tragic and extremely emotional. And so that's always tough, because you have to, you know, another product for gay people that's like about trauma, which is just always like so upsetting. But this one really nails it very well.
It's interesting that you say like Hitler's right-hand man was gay and all that, because it's something that you see throughout history. There's a book that I'm just getting into. It's called Secret City, The Hidden History of Gay Washington.
Oh, yeah, baby.
and it goes back, I mean, like all the way, the chapters in this, if I remember correctly, bear with me for a second while I try to find that damn page. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Harry Truman,
but in that time period,
Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon B.
Wouldn't
Johnson.
It would be great if this just like said that all those presidents were gay.
Richard Nixon. I believe we had a gay president. We don't know.
Oh, God, yes.
Gerald Ford, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George H. Bush, Bill Clinton, which obviously is leading up to Don't Ask, Don't Tell and stuff. Yeah. But I'm it's actually a tough read a little bit because it's very historically accurate. It's not the term I'm looking for. Historically
structured,
structured and heavy. Yeah. So I need like it's not always one that I can dive into. Like, oh, I want to read something, but it's really fascinating. So I saw a lot of people posting about the Rock Hudson one, and I didn't even know that was out there. So I'm definitely gonna watch that.
Yeah, definitely check out both of those. They're both A's for me. I mean, granted, documentaries always kind of get an A. They're so good all the time, so they always get an A. But those especially were great ones.
Awesome. Very nice. Very nice. Well, new this week, we don't have any documentaries, but we do have Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Maybe I should start watching Mission Impossible movies.
They are. No, first of all, you don't have to. I'm not kidding. You like there's no plot in these. He's a secret agent with a secret agent team. You're watching these for the stunts, and anyone saying otherwise is stupid. That's why the fact that this is a part one is like, oh yeah, the plot's so complex, we need a part one. No. So I'll say that to everybody, not having seen this movie. He's an agent and he works with an agency team and his wife is in hiding maybe. And sometimes that comes up at the end, but you won't give a shit because he hangs out a plane. That's what it is.
Yeah. So that's the big release of next week, which it's going to be interesting to see how that does it should be a blockbuster for the studios, but it's going to be interesting as well because it's only going to be an IMAX for a week because of Barbie and Oppenheimer the following week. But also it's a crowded July, I think, with the cinemas.
And that's why it's coming out basically Monday. I already have AMC theater, like my AMC IMAX has it for literally Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Cause he wants like that extra week of IMAXs. He wants like Cruise has that power. I think he does, but
it's crazy, isn't it?
He did talk like a foreign dignitary into borrowing a sub for one of his movies.
I don't get it.
I think he's just that charming, man. Like, I mean, we all want to punch him in the face, but he is that charming. I think if you met him, you'd be like, you know, I think I like this guy.
And then you just turned into like Austin Powers. I think he's just that charming, man.
Charming man. Oh God, that was terrible.
Oh man. What's streaming?
I put on Theater Camp. Is that coming out next week or?
I think it's limited next week because my screening's the following week.
Oh.
I was going to put Theater Camp on there as well, but then I asked the rep and they said that in our area, Philadelphia, large market, it's the 28th, I believe.
There hasn't been a trailer that made me roar with laughter harder than that one. I can't
really
see it. Oh, I thought that was so goddamn funny.
I struggled with that trailer a little bit. I was like, I don't know.
I don't know why it made me laugh so much, but it's like I think it's, well, first of all, I think it's Ben Platt making fun of Ben Platt. So it's like, yes, you know, true. Part of that is feels disingenuous. The other part of it makes me happy for it, but that sucks. That's limited. Damn it. That means it's going to come out the weekend of Barbenheimer.
No, the following week.
Oh, okay, good.
28th, I believe. I didn't realize Ayo Edebiri was in that.
Oh yeah. Ayo Edebiri, Jimmy Tatro, who is always just like one of my favorites because he's such a goofball. Just his voice makes me laugh.
Yeah, it looks special. Put it that way.
You know what? I'm excited to see what comes of that.
Yeah, should be very interesting. I think when is my screening of that? Where are we?
You said next 2 weeks.
Yeah, my screening's the 26th, and it comes out the 28th wide.
Oh my God! Okay, that makes sense.
So, did you hear? Have you seen on film Twitter? What the studios did with Oppenheimer and Barbie for press?
No, but I've seen like the creators all go to their like, you know, consequential movies, except for Cillian Murphy and Christopher Nolan, who are just like, fuck you.
I should be more specific. Both studios scheduled the press screenings on the same night.
I fucking love this. This is my favorite weekend in film of all time. The pettiness is so great. I absolutely love what's happening.
I was just so happy. Of course, of course. And then I was like, is this only a Philly thing? But then our friend Austin Burke posted it as well.
That is just like next level. I'm so excited for this. Like, it's just, I don't even know. Like, both movies, I hope they just like both suck. Just like the theaters just burn down. Because this is bonkers.
I've grown more and more excited about Oppenheimer.
It looks so good. It looks so good. And, you know, hey, we all love our 3-hour movies.
God. Is that the one that clocked in at 3 hours, 9 seconds or something?
3 hours, 9 seconds. The IMAX spool is 11 miles long. That's all fast. So there's an image of it online, and then someone that did a Photoshop of Christopher Nolan standing next to it, but it's a tiny Christopher Nolan, but it looks good. So for a brief second, you think that he's standing in front of a gigantic spool of film.
My God. Insane. Insane.
My favorite weekend ever.
Yeah. It's going to be a special one. All right, Sean, talk to you soon.
Later.
Bye. The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.